older, like the Latvian in the papers. I can tell them she's on her way to meet her boyfriend. Boyfriend. I thought of August, and how hard he worked the family's land. He was so kind to come into the kitchen and apologize for his mother's cruel behavior.
Don't pay any attention to her, Amelia. Someday she'll get a dose of her own medicine, Keith said.
I learned things about him just by watching. I knew which section of rabbit pleased him most, that he preferred autumn to spring, and that he would rather take his breakfast bread alone in the stable than with his parents in the dining room. I watched intently, remembering Mama's words. If you observe carefully, dear, you won't have to ask.
Mama observed, too.
Visitors never had to ask for cream with their coffee or jam for their tea. She had noted their preferences long before. Joanna knew who was hurting, and I knew secrets about the night.
But I felt certain that no one knew my secrets, except maybe the ravens that nested above the cold cellar.
Joanna. My hips and back ached from sleeping on the cold stone floor. I had woken in the middle of the night and imagined I saw the German standing above me in the dark. When I blinked, he was gone, and I realized it was a dream. I was concerned about his wound. That's what I told myself. But the truth poked at me. Why was I looking for him? His wound was healing well. He was stronger than most. I was embarrassed to admit it. I wanted to see him again, not to evaluate his wound, but to discover his name, his mission, and why he had taken the drawing from my suitcase. Ingrid said he was a thief, but she thought he was stirred to know me, not to hurt me. I wanted to believe her. The war was full of brutality. Were there any nice young men still out there? He's probably here somewhere, Ingrid smiled. Watching. I had glanced around the crowded cathedral many times the night prior, wondering if she was right. Joanna? Whispered Ingrid, reaching for my hands. The Russians draw nearer each day. Without you? I can't bear to think what would have happened to me. We just need to cross the ice, I assured her. We're close. The crossing point is only a short walk down the hill. We gathered our belongings. Ingrid spooled the soft scarf from the German soldier around her neck. Amelia smiled at me, behind red lipstick, as we left the cathedral. What a group we were. A pregnant girl in love, a kindly shoemaker, an orphan boy, a blind girl, and a giantess who complained that everyone was in her way when she herself took up the most room. And me, a lonely girl who missed her family and begged for a second chance. We were among the first to cross. The expanse of ice looked enormous.
50 meters between each group, instructed the soldiers. We must not stress the ice all at once. Hurry!
How could we hurry? The walk was kilometers long and the ice was slippery.
Let me go first, said Ingrid, her eyes still bandaged. Alone.
Absolutely not, I told her. We'll go together.
I'll go with Ingrid, said the shoe poet. My walking stick can test more than souls.
No, insisted Ingrid. If I'm alone, I'll truly feel the ice. I'll let you know if it's sound. Then you can bring the cart along with the others.
Ingrid walked several meters out onto the ice, eyes bandaged, hands in front of her. She took a step and stopped, listening. She took another step. The sun made its first appearance, throwing light onto the lagoon. The ice in front of Ingrid was red, frozen with blood. She advanced,
then snapped her foot back, as if sensing the stain. She stood perfectly still and breathed, alone on the frozen water. She took a careful step forward, over the icy blood. She took a few more steps, leaving at least 20 meters between us. I could not bear to see her, bandaged and by herself. I walked out to join her.
"I'm coming, Ingrid."
"Yes, the ice is strong," she called.
"Come along."
I stepped toward her. The rest of our group advanced slowly, carefully, yet desperate to move quickly across the jaws of ice. Ingrid's body suddenly stiffened, her back arched.
"No!"
she screamed.
"Go back!"
Our group retreated. I was too far out to return quickly. And then I heard them. Russian planes strafing overhead. Desperate refugees on the bank erupted in terror. Soldiers dove into snowbanks. I dropped face down onto the frozen surface. The sun brightened, shining through the ice to reveal the horror below. A dead horse and a child's mitten glared at me from beneath the frozen glaze. I closed my eyes, choking on the gruesome images. High-pitched whizzings flew by my head, cracking and popping. Bullets tore through the ice. Frozen shards peppered my coat as screams filled my ears. The firing ceased. I opened my eyes. Streaks of blood surrounded a solitary hole in the center of the ice.
"Ingrid!"
I screamed.
Ingrid was gone.
Her gloved hand suddenly appeared, reaching out of the black water. I crawled toward her. Her hand bobbed and grasped frantically at the edge of the ice.
"Ingrid!"
I wailed. The ice broke. The hole in the ice spread farther, sending a deep crack running directly toward me. Ingrid's hand flapped desperately. A pair of hands tightened around my ankles. I began sliding backward along my belly to the frozen bank.
"Let me go!"
The gap in the ice widened. Water rolled toward me. Panicked screams roared from behind.
"It's all cracking!"
Someone pulled me away. I tried to free myself, to fight my way back across to Ingrid.
"No!"
I pleaded.
"Ingrid!"
I looked out toward the dark, watery hole. Ingrid's frantic hand suddenly went slack. Her fingers softened, slowly curled, and disappeared beneath the ice.
Florian. I followed secretly behind. When the planes appeared, the Polish girl dropped from the cart and tried to scramble to the women on the ice. I pushed her away, then ran to the nurse, pulling her back toward me. The little boy grabbed my leg, trying to yank me to safety. He had the weight of a dry twig, yet heaved with the ferocity of a bull. I dragged the nurse onto the bank, restraining her, fighting her.
"Let me go!"
she kicked and screamed, desperate to save her blind friend. We fell in a heap. I pulled her onto my lap. She reached out to the ice.
"Ingrid,"
she whispered, trembling.
"Please, no."
The nurse's neck fell limp, like a broken doll. Her chin dropped against my chest. She began to cry. The broken shards of ice shifted. The blind girl's blue scarf suddenly appeared on the surface of the water. The little boy buried his head against Poet's leg.
"Make it stop! Please, no more!"
"Shh! There, there, Klaus," said the shoemaker.
The nurse sobbed, clinging to me. I sat, paralyzed, wanting to put my arms around her, but knowing I couldn't. The Polish girl knelt beside us. She spoke quietly, stroking the nurse's hair and wiping her tears. Then, without a word, she lifted my arms and placed them around the nurse.
Alfred. Dearest Hannalora, good morning from the port. It has become overwhelmingly crowded in Gotenhafen. Those fleeing from the region stand in line waiting for ship assignment. We must be cautious with registration, as there may be deserting German soldiers hiding among these refugees. I pity the man who cannot overcome his cowardice, who cannot step on the neck of his own weaknesses. I know you saw the group of Hitler youth come to my door, Laura. The boys teased that I was a coward, not strong enough to serve our country. But how wrong they were. I'm so pleased you know that. Yes, initially I was not part of Hitler Youth, and my critical father was ashamed. But now here I am, called a bit later than most, but only because they have finally realized that it takes a man to succeed where boys have failed. It is so gratifying. And where are the bullies of Hitler Youth? Perhaps dead. Imprinted by the tread of a tank. Death, it seems, has a mind of its own. Yes, I know it must all sound hostile, but this is war. Brave men are reduced to numbers. These numbers are engraved twice on an oval metal disc we wear around our neck. In the event of death, they shall snap the disc in half. Half will be buried with my body. The other half turned into command with my papers and personal effects. I am 42089. I couldn't help but wonder, did Hannelore have a number?
Amelia, we waited on the bank for several hours, but the planes did not return. The water froze again. So did our hands and feet. The soldiers returned to their stations. They insisted we cross a different section of the ice. They rushed the groups of people, all eyes intent on the sky. I resumed my place in the cart. The knight held Joanna by the elbow, worried that she might jump into the hole that had taken the blind girl from us. He was scared to touch her, but wanted desperately to touch her. I held my breath as we crossed, quivering at the thought of our Ingrid frozen beneath. The ice ached and groaned, like old bones carrying too many years, brittle and threatening to snap at any moment. My nerves lurched with each sound. I held my hands across my stomach. The shoe poet walked ahead of the group, tapping the ice with his stick and nodding.
"The ice is arthritic, but no fractures yet," he reported. "Hurry along. The top is melting slightly. We have kilometers to go."
Kilometers to go. The cramping and pressure resumed below my waist. I couldn't watch any longer. I lay back in the frigid cart, closed my eyes, and thought of August. In my mind, the warm sun burned bright. The unfenced pastures rolled soft, like worn velvet. The window boxes puffed with flowers, and the tree branches stooped heavy with ripe plums. August returned to the estate, slick with sweat after a long ride with his horse, Tabrez. I heard the wheels of the cart churn and scrape beneath me. No one had asked, so I didn't mention it. I did not know how to swim.
Joanna. After several hours, we reached the other side of the lagoon. No one celebrated. Instead, we trudged quietly and slowly onto the bank. Finally, Ava spoke.
"I was sure we'd all drown, like cats in a bag."
The wandering boy looked up at Ava. Tears, like slender icicles, were frozen to his cheeks.
"Sorry," she said.
Anger suddenly consumed me. I yanked the German by the arm, pulling him aside.
"I could have saved her."
"No, you couldn't. They not only fired through the ice, they shot her."
"You can revive someone who drowns. It's possible. You kept me away.
Yes, I did. The temperature of the water alone was enough to kill her. It would have killed you, too.
You don't know that!
I yelled. Now, now, interrupted the shoe poet. Let's not soil the memory of Ingrid with arguing.
Poet gestured to the German.
He quite possibly saved both you and Amelia. Amelia also scrambled to Ingrid. I saw it. He stopped her, too.
Amelia had also tried to save Ingrid?
Amelia, are you okay?
I called up to her in the cart.
Yes, okay.
She nodded. We could have lost all of you girls, continued Poet. Not her, said the German of Ava. Her big feet grew roots. She didn't move to save anyone. Feet with roots. That's called a fungal infection, Poet told the wandering boy. A soldier approached our group. Papers, he demanded. I pulled the German toward me. You owe us, I whispered.
Florian. Owed her? Why did I owe her? I saved her life. I tried to distract the soldier while he looked at my papers. A lot of hysteria back there. Their friend fell through the ice, I said.
Lucky it was just one, said the soldier. Yesterday we lost dozens. Damn Russians.
He scanned my papers. He looked up at me, eyes sharp.
Do you still have the parcel?
Yes.
This is signed by Galiter Koch, said the soldier.
I couldn't read his expression. Was he questioning or was he acknowledging?
Yes, I'm in a hurry, I told him. Wait here, he said.
He turned and walked to another soldier. My pulse quickened. The rest of the group overheard the exchange.
Come along, said the shoemaker, corralling the others. Let's leave the boy to his business.
The Polish girl stepped away from the group and stood by my side. It could have been so easy. I could have walked across the ice myself without the burden of the group. They could have tried to save the blind girl. Maybe they all would have drowned in the process. That would have been so much easier. And so much harder.
Bitte.
The word was so quiet, I wasn't even sure I had heard it. I looked down at the Polish girl. She wore red lipstick. Her blonde hair was released from the captivity of her braids. She pulled her pink hat down over her eyes.
Bitte,
she whispered again.
Please.
The soldier and a superior were discussing my papers. Had Dr. Lange and Galiter Koch made the discovery yet? Did the soldiers have my name on a list of traitors? If so, I'd soon feel the shadow of a gun on the back of my skull. The soldier returned, staring at me.
I assume you're going to Pillau? He asked.
You assume? I said with an air of authority, needing him to reveal more.
I am told Galiter Koch may be on his way to Pillau.
No, I am not going to Pillau, I said.
To Gotenhafen, then, he asked.
Gotenhafen was in the other direction. Correct. Gotenhafen.
Yes, Herr Beck, but it's quite a walk to Gotenhafen. There may be a small boat that can take you.
He suddenly saw the Polish girl at my side and raised an eyebrow.
Yours? He said with a grin.
Mind yourself. She's with that group. They helped me when I was injured. In turn, they have helped Galiter Koch and the Führer. I snapped my papers out of his hand.
Have you met Galiter Koch? I asked.
The soldier shook his head.
No, but I've heard about him.
Of course he had. Koch's murderous reputation had made him known and feared.
"Why doesn't Koch have you in uniform?" asked the soldier. "It would be safer for you."
"Maybe, but then I'd be dragged by some unit into the field. As you know, Koch doesn't like his affairs broadcast."
"This is private business," I said, staring him down.
He nodded.
"Listen, I need that boat to Gotenhafen. Now."
Alfred. "Beel dich! Hurry, hurry. Always hurry. Hurrying made my hands itch. I had been assigned to the Gustloff's enclosed sun deck for the day. It was being outfitted as a maternity ward. How inconvenient for women to become pregnant during a war. Quite thoughtless of them. My Mutter certainly would not have done such a thing. I thought of Mutter's bedroom, separate from my father's. But then I dismissed the thought. I preferred not to think of my father at all. "Which cabins will the doctors stay in?" I asked as I hauled wooden cots into a line. "You say doctors as if there will be many," replied the soldier. "I think there will be one doctor who tends to both the women and the injured soldiers." "One doctor for all the patients?" But then I realized my error. "So the nurses will do most of the work." "Oh yes, that's much better." "Nurses? It won't be easy to find nurses. There's a war going on, man. If someone has a baby, you'll be the midwife." Revolting. If women were so careless to become pregnant at such a time, let women sort it out. It was not a job for one of the Führer's finest. "Well, they'll need more medical personnel. We're already worn too thin," I complained. "Sure," the other soldier smirked. "Folding tablecloths and laying mattress pads, that really wears you thin. I'd rather be at the front, killing Russians, but I destroyed my knee, so I'm here." He looked at me. "With guys like you." "This is a most important assignment," I corrected him. "We're going to be commanding 2,000 people." 2,000? He laughed. "You think this tub's going to carry only 2,000 people? Who told you that?"
Amelia. We sat on the bank, shivering, my abdomen seizing. I watched refugees cross the ice and continue their trek down the narrow strip of land between the lagoon and the Baltic Sea. To the left, Gotenhafen. To the right, Pillow. Either way, the journey would be another long one. Our group argued, but finally chose Gotenhafen. They thought a voyage from Gotenhafen would be shorter. The next argument was how to get there. "We can walk," said Ava. "It's much too far. A boat will cut across the inlet faster," argued Joanna. "The Russians are on top of us. There's no time to waste."
"This is what we shall do," counseled Poet. "We will lend our cart and horse to a family on foot. They will be grateful for the transportation. We will try to hire a small boat, meet them in Gotenhafen, and retrieve our belongings. That will suit all parties."
I didn't have any belongings, just a rotten potato in my pocket that I gnawed on when no one was looking. That was all I had. It made me think of my father. "You're all I have," he would say. Mama's death changed my father. One day, a tuft of pure white hair appeared on the back of his head. When I mentioned it, he said it was special, angel hair. But other things changed, too. His skin clung to his bones like drenched clothing. He often held his face in his hands. I quickly realized that what pleased my father the most was my happiness. So I learned to appear happy, even if I wasn't. Father constantly worried about me. He cried when he told me that he was sending me away to the Kleist's farm in East Prussia for safety. I wanted to cry, too. I wanted to scream and refuse. But it hurt so much to see him sad, losing all that he loved. So I assured him that he was right. It was for the best, and that I was not upset. I told him that we would see each other in a couple of years, when the war of winter turned to spring. I became good at pretending. I became so good that after a while the lines blurred between my truth and fiction. And sometimes, when I did a really good job of pretending, I even fooled myself.
Florian. The Polish kid would not give up. She was 15, pregnant with her boyfriend's baby, pregnant with a vision of freedom. And she was brave. I couldn't deny that. There was something else I couldn't deny. Time was running out. I had bullied my way through a couple young guards in rural outposts, but Gotenhafen would be altogether different. Gotenhafen was a major base for the Kriegsmarine, the German navy of the Nazi regime. The military presence would be thick and constant. The naval base and port were also a prime target for Russia's Red Army. They said that Koch himself had left Königsberg. When had he left, and where exactly was he now? Heavy snow fell. I didn't mind the freezing temperature. The cold lowered the risk of infection in my wound. It kept me alert. "Beck," the soldier called out. "That one's yours." A small boat sped up to a rotting pier. I said nothing, just turned and walked toward the pier, the pink hat following close behind. If I had to take the Polish girl in the boat, I would. She would be lost amidst the chaos in Gotenhafen. She'd have to deal with her Latvian papers and her pregnancy by herself. A sense of relief washed over me. I would soon be back on my own. I stepped onto the pier and nodded to the driver of the boat. "Wait, all of you?" he asked. I turned to find the entire group standing behind me on the pier. The little boy approached and held up the earless rabbit, asking if he too could come to Gotenhafen. The nurse's eyes found mine. "Yes, you owe us," they seemed to say.
Alfred. "Good evening, sweet Hannelore. I'm taking a bit of air on the deck of the Gustloff. Although it is -10°C and the wind is howling, it is nice to breathe freely. Everyone seems to smoke. You know how cigarette smoke bothers me. It would upset me greatly to see you defile your candied mouth with foulness like so many young girls I see. Have you done that, Hannelore?" "Of course you haven't." From up on deck, I can see into the port and its surroundings. There must be 30,000 people in the sea of humanity down there. And they say the operation hasn't even truly begun. We are kept company by other ships here in the port. I can see Hansa, merchant ships, old fishing boats, trawlers, and even dinghies that have brought fleeing people from the nearby lagoon. I am told that the Gustloff will sail for the German port of Kiel, an expected journey of 48 hours. I am wondering how she will fare as a heavy weather boat, considering she was built for calm voyages under sunny skies and has not sailed for 4 years. One of our captains in charge is Captain Peterson. He is a pleasant white-haired fellow in his mid-60s. Many of the other naval personnel have gone ashore to defend the port. They have been replaced on board by a Croatian deck crew. It is annoying to have to share everything with the personnel, but fear not. I have devised clever alternatives. Today I marked one of the toilets as inoperable. So from now on, I will have it all to myself. Quite clever of your Alfie. Some at home did not appreciate my cleverness or abilities. They saw me as a birdie with a troubled wing that should remain close to the nest. They didn't know the truth. I am quite confident that no one is aware of my ingenuity and objectives. I just might surprise them all, Hannelore. War is full of duty and decision. You know I have made that commitment. Yes, life can be lonely for the truly exceptional, darling. So I build my own nest and feather it with thoughts of you.
Joanna, we arrived in Gotenhofen at dusk, our faces red and chapped from the wind on the water. Amelia had been sick through most of the boat trip, but insisted she was fine. Her face was the color of phlegm as we walked into the port. She held on to the sleeve of the German to steady herself. We needed to find a place for her to rest. Something for her to eat. For weeks we had trekked to get to the port. Nothing could have prepared us for what we found there. Horses and animals, lost or abandoned by their owners, roamed helpless in the streets. Gray naval supply trucks zoomed about. Crates, boxes, luggage, and provisions lined the quays.
Meta!
A woman screamed, running toward us. She grabbed my arm.
Please, have you seen my Meta? She's only 5 years old.
A lady with a blue bundle drifted by, crying.
His wet diaper's frozen solid. Should I tug it? Will it tear his skin off?
People screamed out for food and lost family members.
My God, look what this war has done. Said Ava.
The wandering boy clung to the leg of the shoe poet. Even the German seemed startled. Poet looked around.
There are so many. It could take days to secure passage. We must stay together. Let's agree that if we get separated, we shall meet under the large clock on that building.
He motioned to the distant clock with his walking stick. Ava stopped a shawled woman pushing a baby buggy through the snow.
What are the reports? What do you know? She said. What do I know? They say Hitler's in a bunker in Berlin.
The woman's voice was deep, husky like a man's.
And we're here. Where are the bunkers for us?
She looked up at Ava.
Boy, you're a big one, huh?
Ava's face clouded. Excuse me, is there any organized lodging? I asked.
Organized? The woman laughed. Take a look around. Nothing's organized. It's bedlam, stupid girl. Grab space where you can, and fight for a boarding pass like the rest of us.
The group moved closer to me. The wandering boy approached the baby carriage. His eyes widened. And how is your child faring? I asked, peeking into the buggy. Tucked into the buggy was not a child. It was a goat.
Don't judge me,
said the woman, stepping in front of the buggy.
If I don't take it, someone else will. I've got kids who are hungry.
I'm not judging. We're all hungry.
Well, this goat's mine. Find your own.
She then looked us over and motioned me closer.
I'm told the roof of the old movie house doesn't have holes. Might be warmer there.
Thank you, I said. She stood, waiting.
I could have sold that information,
she told me. She snorted and shoved off, thrusting the buggy across broken stones and ice. The sound of a bleeding goat echoed behind her. We stood silent in a circle, staring at one another, Ava finally spoke.
I'm sorry, but that was the ugliest baby I've ever seen.
And for heaven's sake, Joanna, find your own goat, Poet chimed.
Movie house has no holes, said the wandering boy, imitating the deep tone.
And then, from behind the group came his voice.
Careful, Klaus. You could sell that information, said the German.
I tried not to, but I couldn't help it. I laughed. The wandering boy started to giggle. Ava burst out laughing. And then the most amazing thing happened. The German smiled and laughed. Hard.
Let's find the movie house, said Ava,
once we had regained our composure. We walked away from the harbor and the enormous ships. Would we be able to secure passage on one tomorrow? If so, which ship would ferry us to freedom? Snow fell as we walked, piling atop our heads and shoulders. The German grabbed my hand and pulled me toward him.
I'm sorry,
he whispered.
About Ingrid.
I looked down. Before I could respond, he dropped my hand and walked away.
Amelia. He was beautiful. The night was beautiful. Handsome when he smiled. He didn't want anyone to see it. He didn't want to acknowledge it himself. But for a brief moment, I saw him. The real man inside of him. Not the one tortured by secrets and pain. And he was beautiful. I wanted August to meet him. They were so alike. Quietly strong. I wished Mama could meet August. She would seat him at our dining room table and serve him thick cuts of bread with sticky marmalade. The belly of the teapot would be warm, full of raspberry tea. Red poppies in the center of the table would give a friendly wave from their glass jar. Mama would remove her apron before sitting down next to August. Then she'd reach across, put her hand on top of his, and tell him. Tak się cieszę, że tu jesteś. I am so glad you are here. Joanna still had her mother. Reuniting with her mother was her motivation. She would slay dragons to get to her. Mother was anchor. Mother was comfort. Mother was home. A girl who lost her mother was suddenly a tiny boat on an angry ocean. Some boats eventually floated ashore, and some boats, like me, seemed to float farther and farther from land. I forced my mind toward happy thoughts. August, warmth, storks, home. Anything to distract myself from the swelling pressure inside me. I walked with the others in search of the movie house. With each step, the truth drew closer. I could not make it much longer.
Florian. The military presence in the harbor was even heavier than I expected. That meant the Red Army was close. For once I was grateful to be within the group. I kept my head down and walked with them surrounding me. The scenes were agonizing. A woman nearby fell to her knees, sobbing.
They say I can only choose one child for the ship. How can I choose? Please don't make me choose.
The feeling of desperation was so physically present I could have shoveled it off the dock. Germany needed any and all men for service. SS squads would be on patrol. I had forged courier papers, but an officer could easily ask me to abandon my mission and drive a tank instead. The woman with the goat had said everything was disorganized. She was wrong. Things were chaotic, yes, but the Germans were always organized. Meticulous. They had systems for everything.
Nazi Party officials, local leaders, and their families would have priority passage on the departing ships. Officers and wounded soldiers would also be granted passage. After the priority travelers and military personnel were loaded, the Germans would choose refugees. Women with children would be allowed first. Young, single men like myself would not be allowed. At all. I might finally be forced to reveal that I was hiding a wound greater than a piece of shrapnel. If so, I would need the nurse's help. The strategy was one I had hatched days ago. But it wouldn't work if she was mad at me. By grabbing the nurse, I had saved her life. Why was she angry? It bothered me that she was mad. It bothered me even more that I cared. But I needed her help. So I had to say I was sorry. But I didn't have to hold her hand.
Alfred. Darling Laura. The tension grows with each hour that passes. Tomorrow morning, ambulance trains will be arriving from the east, full of wounded soldiers. I was initially assigned to the hospital ward, but I will find a replacement, of course, as they will surely discover my talents are better suited in other areas. As a child, my mutter would shield my eyes from sickness and deformity. She was quite right to do so. There is so much ugliness and imperfection in the world. We know it exists, but we create further trauma by being forced to look at it. Some things are better ignored.
Frick, snap out of it!
I turned toward the voice that addressed me. This area will be for limbless soldiers and amputees, but we can't take all of them. Tomorrow, when the ambulance trains arrive, we will examine the wounded. Only soldiers with a strong chance of survival will be embarked.
Examining wounds? No. That wouldn't do at all.
Excuse me, sir, asked another sailor. You said those with a chance of survival will be embarked. What about our men who are more gravely injured?
They will be left behind, replied the officer.
Quite wise, I nodded. Leave the browned cabbage in the basket. It makes no sense to save a head with only a few good leaves.
Shut up, Frick,
they said in unison.
Joanna. The town of Gotenhofen bloated with refugees and military. The shoe poet scavenged through abandoned luggage as we walked. He found two pairs of boots. The wandering boy quickly shined them. By the time we reached the movie house, Poet had traded the boots for a large bucket of hot porridge.
Useful skills can always be bartered. You see, your expertise is valuable, he told the wandering boy.
The boy beamed. We approached the small movie house. We'll sit down soon, I assured Amelia. She looked as if she might collapse. We walked to the back door but found it locked. The shoe poet turned to the German.
Perhaps you can find a way in, friend.
Perhaps, he nodded.
Gather around me.
We did as he asked. He removed a small jackknife from his pocket and within seconds had opened the door. We slipped inside and he locked the door behind us. We should leave it open, I told him. Others will need a place to stay too. Others were already inside, sitting in the chairs, lying on the floor.
I see the goat mother made a few coins selling her information, said Ava. Where shall we make our camp?
Asked the shoe poet, looking around.
We should take the projector room, said the German. Upstairs.
I don't want to walk up the stairs, said Ava. I'm tired. Let's just sit and eat this porridge before it gets cold.
I agreed. The day had been so long. The boat ride. The ice. Ingrid. I felt a tremor in my throat.
So, said Ava, who's hiding the blackberries and carrots from the dead house?
After a quiet meal, I laid Amelia down and elevated her legs on a suitcase. The wandering boy was asleep in seconds. Ava also fell asleep quickly, her huge frame the length of two wandering boys. She snored, sputtering growls each time she exhaled. I pulled my medical bag from my suitcase, preparing for those who might need help.
"Hey," said the German quietly.
I looked over to him.
"There are several ships. Tomorrow we'll all be split up at registration," he said.
Amelia looked at me. I hadn't thought of that. "But we should try to stay together," I whispered to him.
"Well, what's your story for her?"
he said, pointing to Amelia. "I guess the same, with the Latvians' papers." He shook his head.
"It will be tougher here. Everyone wants to get on a boat."
"I'll explain that she's pregnant. She'll open her coat and they'll see."
"But she doesn't look old enough to be the Latvian. She doesn't speak any Latvian," he said. "They're strict here. There are senior officers in charge, not just young recruits."
Amelia reached out and touched the German's knee. "Bitte," she said.
"I'm sorry. I can't take you on," he told her. "But she can."
He pointed to me.
"I can?" "Yes. Like the old man said, skills are valuable. The larger ships will have hospital wards. They'll need you. Present yourself for work, but tell them you want to bring your patients with you."
Amelia looked at him. "You are patient, too," she said.
"Maybe. I do have..."
He hesitated.
"A medical condition," he said. "The shrapnel. I had nearly forgotten."
"Oh, I haven't even asked. You seemed well. How is your wound?"
"It's not that. It's something else," he said.
"What?" I asked. Amelia patted her left ear and then pointed to the German. He stared at her, shocked but laughing.
"What are you, a little witch or something? How did you know?"
"What is it?" I repeated. He leaned in over Amelia.
"My left ear has been damaged," he whispered. "I have papers, an important assignment. I need to get on a boat. But there's a chance they'll ask me to stay and fight instead. I'd have a stronger case with a medical testimony. You could say that I'm recovering from a wound along with losing my hearing."
What was he asking me to do?
"I'm not a doctor," I told him. "But I was your patient," he said. "Please, just think about it."
He grabbed his pack and pointed up to the projection room.
"I'm going to find my way up there."
He walked off. He had spoken more to me in the last 5 minutes than he had since he joined our group. The shoe poet was still awake, listening. He raised his eyebrows at me, then rolled over to sleep.
Alfred. I stared at the envelope from Mutter. It had arrived 2 months ago. I decided to open it. "My dear Alfie, I am so very worried. Despite my many letters, I have heard nothing from you. Please send a few words to let your Mutti know that you are safe. Are you eating well? How is your stomach? Heidelberg is fairly quiet relative to the rest of the country. I am grateful that we are insulated. I clean your room in hopes you shall soon return home. Last week, while dusting in your closet, I discovered all of the butterflies pinned to the back wall. Imagine my surprise. So many, yet you never mention them. How long have you had them, Alfred? And why? All is the same as in my last letter. The Jaeger's house is still lonesome. Frau Henkel always mentions you when she speaks of the Jaegers. I think you admired little Hannelore, did you not? I wonder if there is something you haven't told me. Do not be frightened to share your secrets. I will not tell your father. When the war is over, there will be a right side to land upon. The wrong side could have grave consequences. Your father is aware of that. I hope you are too. Remember to wear 2 pair of socks. It will protect your bunions. With loving thoughts always. Muti. I grabbed a pen and paper. Dear Mutter, your letter has just arrived. I am in Gotenhofen. I am fine and very busy. I am working on the ship Wilhelm Gustloff and am too occupied in duty to write often. Do not touch my butterflies, and please refrain from entering my room. I know nothing of the Jaegers. Your son, Alfred.
Florian. I knew it. The nurse would want to see my ear. I watched her make her way through the aisle, looking for the stairway. Would she find it? I sat down and began cleaning my nails with the knife. She opened the door. I'm surprised it's unlocked. I knew you would come up. How did you know? She asked. I shrugged. You're exceedingly responsible. You have this terrible need to heal people. I looked up from my jackknife. Why is that? You're one to ask questions. You barely speak. I've asked your name several times and you won't reply. Do you know what I call you? She asked. The German. I'm Prussian. I looked down at my knife. Should I have told her that? Okay, so now you're the Prussian. She knelt in close. Let me look at your ear. She reached into her bag, pulled out a small light, and peered into my ear. I could feel the warmth of her face near mine. An amber pendant rested in the hollow of her throat. Nice necklace. Do you like amber? I asked, thinking of the priceless swan. I'm Lithuanian. Of course I like amber. Your eardrum has ruptured. This is recent. How did it happen? She asked. The explosion. Same time as the shrapnel, I told her. She pressed around my ear. Her fingertips brushed against my earlobe. I twitched. Does that hurt? She asked. I shook my head. No, it didn't hurt. I was half deaf, but I wasn't numb. The nurse's face was inches from mine. Her mouth was close, and her breath was in my ear. I closed my eyes, fighting like hell to hold off the shiver. She was testing me. She leaned back on her heels, grinning. Are you satisfied? I asked her. Oh, yes. She smiled. You must be deaf in that ear. I know you said something. I could feel it. I just couldn't hear it. Well, I'd like you to hear this. I'm Joanna. You should call me by my name. Not nurse, not girl. Joanna. That might be impolite, I told her. You're older than me. I should probably call you ma'am, or maybe madame. She rolled her eyes. Lie down. I want to check the dressing on your wound. I lay back and folded my arms behind my head. I had to ask. Or maybe you're a missus, I said. No, I'm not a missus, she said, inspecting my wound. Do you have a missus? I flinched. That area you're touching now, it still hurts, I said. That's normal. If it were infected, you'd have a fever and discoloration. She had no problem returning to medical chat. She softly swept back my overgrown hair and laid her palm against my forehead. Her hand was warm. You don't have a fever. She paused and cleared her throat. So I've been thinking about what you said. We could all be split up tomorrow. I need to stay with Amelia. You need to?
She peeled my soiled bandage back farther. Yes, her time is near, and despite the brave face she's putting on, she's probably quite frightened. Are you frightened? I wanted to ask. Was a soldier waiting somewhere for her? I thought of the song Lily Marlene that she had mentioned. Maybe a guy was waiting under a lamppost back in Lithuania. So you want to help the Polish girl? Are you like that English nurse, the one who carried her lamp through the dark to save all of those sick people? No, she said flatly. I'm no Florence Nightingale. It's just... Emilia reminds me of someone. I realized that telling the truth might be the ammunition I needed. She reminds me of someone, too, I said. I have a younger sister. It worked. Her head snapped to me. You do? I nodded. She's nearly 16 now, like the Polish girl. My father sent her up north near the Danish border for safety. I haven't heard from her in over 3 years. I'm going to find her. Her expression softened. Are your parents still alive? I asked. Her hands stopped. Her fingers rested lightly on my chest. She stared off into the corner. I hope so. She sighed. Family. I had hit the nerve. I was exactly where I needed to be to convince her. But suddenly I felt bad. She was genuinely a nice girl. And why did she have to be so pretty? Why couldn't she have a mustache like that giant Ava? I try so hard not to think negatively, she said. My mother is in a refugee camp in Germany, but my father and brother are still in Lithuania. Mother thinks they're fighting in the forests. I've heard that Stalin has done unspeakable things to Lithuanians. And then I think of the family upstairs at that estate. She paused. Are you absolutely sure they were all dead? I keep thinking that maybe one of the children was alive, that I could have helped. I didn't want to describe it for her. They were dead. She looked straight at me. I did something stupid. I stared back at her, waiting. The curtain to her guard was sliding down. Her truths were there for the taking. A soft curl slipped from beneath her ear onto her cheek. That curl. It was killing me. I wrote the family a note, saying that I borrowed their sewing kit. It didn't feel right taking something of theirs. That was before I knew they were all upstairs, of course. I signed my name on the note and left it in the kitchen. Now my full name is in that house. What if the relatives return to find a dead family and my name? Sure, you slaughtered the family and then left a borrow note for a sewing kit. That's a real calculated killer. I laughed. The curtain flew back up. I had pushed too far. Killers aren't always assassins. Sometimes they don't even have blood on their hands. She gathered her bag, leaving my shirt open. Your stitches should be removed in a couple days. I don't know if they will accept me on a ship. If they do, I may think about vouching for your ear and your wound. But I have to know more. I can't take the risk. Either give me your name, show me your papers, or tell me what you're hiding in your pack. She stood up and looked down at me. I raised myself onto my elbows, but said nothing. I really wanted not to like this girl, but was failing miserably. You think you're sly, she said, shaking her head. I know you took something from my suitcase. I want it back, by tomorrow.
I don't know what you're talking about. Maybe you'd better check your suitcase again.
Oh, you're good, but you're not that good, she said. And trust me, you're not the only one with secrets. Good night, Prussian.
She closed the door. I lay back down on the cold tile floor. I reached into my pocket and pulled out her note about the sewing kit. What sort of girl leaves a promissory note in the midst of a bloodbath? An honest one. I stared at her pretty handwriting.